maybe if there are some pressing questions, I could take two or three questions, and then we could take the break. Yes?
Animals have language, too, and they also can create, some animals, very complex societies. I just finished reading a book a few months ago that talked about just four animals. I can only remember three of them. It was whales and elephants and wolves, the three that I remember. But they have very complex societies, obviously emotion as well,
right.
And a very clear language.
Yes, I'm not denying the Bible actually talks about animals having spirit. And so certainly animals, many animals, have a rudimentary language ability. I'll just use our dog. Her name is Tiffany. She's a Maltese poo, half Maltese, half poodle. Okay, very intelligent. I would say she understands, I would say, at least 100 words.
We understand millions of words.
Yeah.
So it's the difference between was it Coco the gorilla can say words, right? Yeah. And understand them, but there is a vast difference.
Yeah, there's a vast gap. A huge gap between what humans can do and what animals, even elephants and dolphins and so on.
Unbridgeable.
It's an unbridgeable gap there. Let me just say, for one thing, as humans, we are able to assign words to concepts like justice and mercy and beauty. Various things that are beyond, I believe, what animals are capable of doing. So, I'm not by what and given what I've said, I'm not saying that many animals don't have a limited level of language ability, but I'm saying humans have a vastly higher level of this ability. Okay. I'll take your question.
I'm interested in your comment. I saw recently this very large computer that IBM created on the line of artificial intelligence, and it can read hundreds of books per minute, and it's absorbing all this information. Recently, they've turned it loose where it's doing analysis on cancer patients and things of this nature, and they were showing where it was actually doing this better than a team of doctors. Where would you...
I would say that all that is made possible by the software that's run on that machine. It's entirely the software.
And it's all created by humans.
And that software is created by humans using their own language ability and intelligence.
But they said that inside of there, it teaches itself what to look for, so they're saying that now has this innate ability to learn.
All of that is programmed. There are algorithms that are applied to help the machine process the information in those ways.
Thank you.
Just the word extrapolation comes to mind, where the human has the ability to take very diverse things and then create some sort of relationship out of that.
Yes.
An extrapolation.
Yes.
Sort of,
right.
Where maybe we'll see that's where the differentiation.
Yeah. So we have vast powers of reason, of ability to apply logical rules to process our observations in very complex ways and reach conclusions. But I would submit that almost all of this, we are utilizing language, aspects of language to do that. I'm saying we're more than just, our abilities include more than our language abilities, but that is certainly an important, key aspect of how we function. Okay, over here.
I'm very interested in the whole thing of education of young people. terms of what has been done, given what you said, it would be, of course, important to try and get that into our schools. I don't know how far that's gone. I remember one teacher that was talking, he actually taught both side by side in a non-secular school, Christian school. How far has that gone, and what kind of strategy should we employ to try and, you know, because it seems to me if we could get to the right places, we could really make progress, but I mean, I expect opposition, so how has it gone so far in terms of getting into our education system?
Well, I would say, as far as I can perceive, hardly anybody, very few Christians understand what I've been talking about today. This is a relatively new these ideas is relatively new. So the field is wide open for you, for example, to carry what you're learning here today and making more other people aware of it. I've been trying to sort of get the word out. I've been giving talks like these for many years, and I've been a little puzzled why it doesn't get more traction. I did manage, in all my busyness, to get a paper written in 2009 that incorporates most of these ideas. I published one about a year ago in the Journal of the Evangelical Theological Society, which is a evangelical publication for scholars and pastors. I've been surprised at how little response, how little response that's generated. I'm not sure whether these ideas are just too difficult, too complex for people to understand, or that they don't know what to do with it. So to me, it's extremely significant. It's extremely important. But for some reason, these ideas, as I'm sharing them, don't seem to be, as I said, getting much traction. And I just do not understand why. Okay, that's an excellent idea. I hadn't even realized that this isn't being videoed right now, but I plan to give it again in Edmonton next Saturday. So, okay, we'll have a more, you know, this is an unplanned question time. We're planning our main question time at the end. Do you think it's a good time to take a break?
That's
or
do
you want to take more questions? What do you think?
Well, actually, you can take more questions if you want while people are thinking about them, because we have the time.
Okay, over
you.
Here.
Yes. The idea of a word and a concept, we have the Lord creating, using the word. Say a great power of the word. Now, and the concept always seems to have to be clothed with a symbol or a word in order for us to be able to process it. I don't think there's any naked, as humans, it doesn't seem like we have naked thoughts. Those thoughts somehow need to be expressed. Emotionally, you have poetry and so on, for the mathematician, he's expressing it with mathematical symbols and so on. But my question is just the relationship between the word and the concept. Have you explored that? Is there anything you can give us a little more on that?
Okay. Well, I don't think I can do much better than that illustration I gave at the beginning, where that you have this concept of a dog, and it's a moderately broad concept. There are many animals that will fit that category, as that symbol will generally represent. But the actual symbol, if you will, the sound, is arbitrary. There's nothing in that symbol that has anything to do with the concept. So you could use the German Hund, that symbol adequately represents a dog just as well as the Russian for sovaka, or the Italian for cane, or the Spanish perro, or the Chinese for gao. All those are just arbitrary symbols or sounds. I could make up a new sound. Let me think of a sound. Somebody want to propose another sound?
Woof.
We could use the sound woof, and assign that meaning to that sound. And you'd have to fold that into a vocabulary of some language. It wouldn't be that hard to fold it into English, for example. And we have two symbols. We either call it a dog or a wolf. But my point is that the in terms of the way I'm framing what language is, the symbols are secondary and arbitrary, whereas the meaning is primary.
Yeah. Well, I'm just taking the example of the Lord bringing the animals to Adam.
Yeah.
He looks at the innate characteristics of these animals and gives them a proper image. And it's, the phrase is that the Lord wanted to see what he would name those animals. It was a test of this process.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I take that account as being God allowing Adam to come up with names, generate the vocabulary that he was going to be using in the future. He needed to come up with names for all these different animals, and so yeah. Okay.
Taking off of this gentleman's concept about the children, because that's a big concern of mine too. Just before coming here, I had a conversation with a PhD scientist friend. He's a researcher. And we share the same concern, but from totally different viewpoints. His concern was that, because I stated that I believed in the six-day creation, right? And he thought that was just wacko. His point was, so we say we have the same concern, that young people cannot maintain their faith if they believe that, because they come against all this other stuff. So the challenge of why is it this getting, the wrong people are coming to these things, and the ones that ought to be here aren't interested. And I think it's basically a point of faith. Like, my question to him was, then at what point in Scripture do you choose to believe what is written? And that's my challenge. And they really can't answer that. But so I prefer to have the faith that what is written is what is meant.
Right.
Whereas he prefers to decide wherever, I'm not sure where, you know. So I just don't have that. Maybe his faith is stronger, but I don't have that.
I've agreed to give a message on Sunday morning. It's at some Alliance Church.
Richmond
Alliance Church. And it's not a scientific talk. It basically is a historical talk, the history of thought, how we got today, to where we are today in this realm. How how was it that 200 years ago in the West, you know, most educated people, even educated people, took the Bible at face value. And they believed in the flood. They believed in a literal creation of Adam and Eve. They basically took the historical aspects of the Bible as fact. Okay? Now, how did we get from there to where we are today, where there's almost no one you can point to that will hold, you know, will quote the Bible as the authority, as being true, as being truth? The Bible has come under such withering assault as far as its truthfulness is concerned for so many generations that here today we are a tiny minority that think that the Bible has anything significant to say, that has anything that it, much less being true from the first word to the last word. A point I will make is that if a person has enough exposure to the Bible, understands all the internal evidence that it is consistent and agrees with the world around us, all that you really need is the Bible. The internal evidence is sufficient to have that kind of competence. But the vast majority of people today that's a place they can't get to. The Bible's come under such serious attack that people are convinced that it's full of scientific errors and that it's, to use your term, it's a whack. The person that takes the Bible seriously is some kind of wacko. Okay? I believe there is a path if a person is interested, because many of us in this room have found that path to get out of that predicament and to a point where we believe the Bible indeed is the Word of God and that Jesus indeed is authentic. I would say it is possible to find one's way through that maze to get to where we are, but there are some ways to help a person that is at least a little bit open to wanting to get there. We can show them the way.
But that's the operative word, is if.
I think
one of the things that I've always sort of commented about is that, and I think this is the foundation for evolution itself, is that people don't want there to be a God.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
if there's a God, we're accountable to him.
Yeah.
So I think it's not a matter of not being able to understand the Bible. It's
And a lot of we're in a spiritual war, and the devil, his main strategy is deception. So he's deceiving people on all fronts, on almost every issue that people are being deceived, we have a task. How do we help people escape from that deception? And I personally, I'm even though I'm involved in creation science, I mean I've devoted decades of my life to this enterprise. Nevertheless, I don't ignore. And when I'm talking with people individually, I try to be sensitive and quick to raise the issue of the person of Jesus, because I believe he is our exhibit A. There's no other topic, no other piece of evidence that comes close to comparing with him as evidence that the Bible is true. And also in Romans 1:16, Paul says that the gospel is the power of God to salvation, but I believe the way the gospel is often presented is uh, it's It's not presented for the as the good news that it is. And so I'm personally excited about having learned what I consider a very positive way to present the gospel. It's the one pioneered about, what was that? That's about more than 45 years ago by D. James Kennedy. He had his book, this book called Evangelism Explosion. And so the first message, in simple terms, the leading phrase, the leading proposition is that heaven is a free gift. It is not earned or deserved. And I can ask the person, have you ever heard that before? And the vast majority of people say, no, I have never heard anything like that before. I cannot even believe it's true. And so most people have the idea that they've got to be deserving of heaven. And they know in themselves that they're not. And that's why they're afraid of that God might be real. But the gospel, I believe, is able to break through that because it is good news. That's what the Greek word means, and it is a gift. It's not earned or deserved, and there's a good reason why it cannot be earned or deserved. That's the second point. It's because God's standard is absolute perfection. And therefore, heaven has to be a gift. It cannot come to us any other way. It's got to be a gift. So a person needs to be like a good fisherman, able to use the have the right use the right approach to catching the fish. But I emphasize not. If we're really wanting to make an impact, we also need to become experts in the gospel and how to present the gospel in an effective way.
But even with Christians, these are Christians that are denying. So that
with Christians, it's a little different issue, I don't have as much contact with those kinds of, it's not that I don't, but basically I share my testimony. That's one of my main approaches, sharing how I was once where they are, and I'm no longer there. I found a much better place to be.
So. Which story, by the way, I would like to hear. That's the first story. Later on. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Maybe after the break. Maybe it's people would maybe like coffee and a snack. So maybe, Ed, you have a question? Maybe we'll take your question and then we'll have a break.
I just had a question about if you're going to deal with Babel at all and make that compared up to the non-physical reality and where you started out of that.
I will give you a preview of what I'm covering in the last half.
Okay.
Most of what I'm going to talk about is biology, how language applies in biology, and what some of the implications are, how it demands the God of the Bible, that what we see in biology. Okay, so that's the main point of the second half, I can talk. I don't have anything about Babel in here. That's might be surprising, but certainly I believe Babel is an important issue and certainly is involved with language. But after the break, I primarily want to talk about biology and how it has linguistic underpinnings that it's inconceivable that you could have biology without that very ingenious encoding of information that exists in DNA. Okay, let's take a break.
Thank you.